Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, continuing an interesting discussion of what happens when we die.
Yeah, isn't it so interesting? People love to talk about dying, don't they?
Well, we hope we see the Lord.
Yes, that's right.
But other than that, we're talking obviously more what happens to your estate and all the plans you've made. And you're going to continue this discussion this week as we get into something having to do with the three evils of probate.
Oh, boy.
Okay,
that's coming
up here in a moment, but what else?
Yeah, so, well, let's take a quick review of where we've been. We've had this series ongoing for a little bit now, and it's really a discussion about, well, what happens if I were to pass away? We talked about what would it look like if you have no planning at all, because many listeners know that's what most people choose as their plan, which is no plan at all. That is a plan, by the way. So it just means that Washington state law will take over. No, Washington doesn't take your assets. It's just that the law is determined by Washington. So if you don't like that idea, then maybe having a plan is a good one. And we talked about some of the differences between wills and trusts. We're going to talk a little bit more about that today, specifically as we head into, well, what does it look like if we walk through probate? And we've talked about unique business assets, unique assets such as a business. There, that's what my brain wanted to say. Mm. What if you're a business owner? What if you have artwork? What if your estate is made up of unique things, and how do we split that, and how do we direct it in an estate? So all of this then is about the planning part. So now someone has passed away. Well, what do we do with the plan? Mm. And oftentimes we have to go through this thing called probate. And so, yeah, you mentioned the three evils of probate. Well, it could cost too much, it takes too long, and it's public. Those are the three concerns,
evils.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to kind of look at those, and in light of we live in Washington, so what does it really mean to have something go through probate? And specifically, there are many, many attorneys out there that have the ideology or the thought that, well, probate in Washington isn't that big of a deal. Okay, well, I would tend to disagree. Mm. So I understand why they might say that. That's more of a knee-jerk reaction about a lawyer's perspective versus maybe the family's perspective. So therefore, this discussion is going to be about probate. And so let's get into probate, shall we?
Okay.
So, we talked about these quote-unquote three evils of probate. It costs too much, takes too long, and then it's an open and public process. So let me address that last one first, because indeed, if we have to go through the probate process, then it is an open court forum.
Now, why is that? That's just what a society has always held that distinction for people when they passed.
So it's not about passing. It's about the court structure, which is we don't like things done in secret. So a part of our court process is to have an open and public forum so that people will see what's happening within the law. So it makes it more transparent in theory. So if it's a transparent system, there's not backdoor deals. You may have heard that, attorneys are really not supposed to have their own sequestered conversation with judges about a case. It wraps around all of this idea that this is an open public case, and so therefore, well, truth is had in light. It doesn't happen in the dark.
Why is who you gave things to and how much your estate was, why is that anyone's business?
Because it has to go through the court process. Now, it doesn't have to. It's when it does go through the court process, then court process is open. Mm. So therefore, your documents are open. Therefore, anyone who would have a potential interest can then go to the court system and see what's happening with that case. Mm. So again, it's about having an open public forum so that we get rid of the backdoor deals, right? So that we don't have things done in secret, which the Word of God says ultimately is going to be shouted from the mountaintop anyways. So come to the light. And that's really the premise of which our court systems are built upon, which is we want an open forum. So if we have to go through the probate process, it is going to be an open court forum. If I go and open up a case, well, I do it with other people in the courtroom who may have cases that day in the same area, in the same room that I am in. And then it gets registered into the court system, which is, again, an open court process. And so people can look that up online or go to the court clerk and ask for a copy. So if it's going to go through the probate process, indeed, it is going to be an open public hearing. Now, there are some things in the law. I don't know all that much about them, that we do have sealed records for minors, for cases dealing with sexual assault and other things that may be that society has said, you know what, if we're dealing with these topics, then we're going to entrust the court to use their discretion to kind of not disclose names and other things. But for even that case is going to be open. It's just that we're going to redact names in some court documents that may be too sensitive.
But then if you have good planning and you have a good trust, then it's not open.
Well, it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. And we're going to get there. So how do we potentially have to go through this court process? Okay, so let's kind of back up. So why would an estate end up in probate? Well, there's a couple reasons why. First of all, if you've done no planning at all and you have an asset that is only in your name, okay, so there's no joint owner and the asset doesn't have a beneficiary designation. Now, one of the most easy assets to kind of connect what that would look like is if someone owned a home and they were single and they passed away. So most homes in Washington state do not have a beneficiary deed. That is something in the past 5-6 years that Washington state has now allowed. But most homeowners just own their home in their name. And so if someone were to pass away, how do we legally transfer title if they can no longer sign the deed? So that person is supposed to sign away their rights. That's called a deed, and sell the property or gift the property to someone else. Well, when someone has passed away, if they are the only owner, and so if they're the owner, that means there's no trust because otherwise the trust would own the home. So therefore, there's either no planning or even if they have a will, if there's no joint owner and no beneficiary, then we go to the will and determine what happens. So if they don't have a will, then we go to Washington state law to determine what happens. So now we have to get someone in authority over that decedent's name so that someone can legally sign on behalf of the decedent. So that means we have to go to the court and open up what is fondly known as a probate. Now, in Washington, everything goes through the Superior Court, but so we don't have a specific probate court. Other states do. So I'm licensed in Michigan, and Michigan has a very specific probate court, but we don't have that in Washington. So in order to get someone empowered over a decedent, the system has just simply always been we want to check the integrity of the document before us, and we want to know who has the legal rights and why they have the legal rights in order to put them in charge of an estate. In other words, in charge of all of the belongings that someone has when they pass away. So how do we get to probate? We get there most commonly by not having any plan at all or by using a will and not having a joint owner and or beneficiary designation on a certain asset. So that could be a bank account. You may be a single individual, have a bank account, but you never put a beneficiary designation on it. Therefore, that asset would have to go through the probate process.
Bank accounts have beneficiary
designations? They can. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Right. Yeah, almost any financial institution is going to have a process to where they want a beneficiary listed on their account. Why? Because, well, they don't want to hold the funds and go through the rigmarole of going of having somebody go through a probate. It delays things from the financial institution's perspective. They would much rather have somebody walk in and say, I'm the beneficiary. Here's a death certificate to prove somebody died and give me my money. Here's my driver's license. So it's a much faster way for a bank or a other financial institution that holds your 401k, that holds your investment funds, holds an annuity for you, has a life insurance policy. All of these different institutions are going to have a beneficiary designation. Now, here's the concern. From my perspective, that financial institution is doing estate planning because their contract with you, when you sign the when you open up a financial account, you sign a contract, and in that contract it says, if you fill out the beneficiary designation, we're going to follow this. So it actually overrides a trust, a will, and going through the probate process. Because why? It's a contract. So therefore, I just want people to be thinking about that when you use a beneficiary on any type of financial account, you're actually doing your estate plan instead of relying upon strong documents created by an attorney that can deal with the holistic picture of everything and make sure that your assets are aligning with your financial plan or, excuse me, with your estate plan. So whether that is a will or whether that is a trust, an estate planner should be touching every asset and making sure that it aligns with your plan. If they're not, well, then they may have not done their full job. So an asset that does not have a beneficiary designation and is in your individual name, no joint owner, we need to have a legal way to transfer that to the beneficiaries of the estate. Now, the beneficiaries can be determined through a will or through a trust. And if not, then again, Washington State is going to have a pecking order of who receives what. And that may or may not be your desire. So having some sort of a plan instead of no plan at all is always best.
In Washington State, is it always the spouse who's at the top of the pecking order?
Yes and no. How's that for a good attorney answer? So it depends on whether it is a first marriage or a blended family. So in a blended family, the children of the decedent may have rights over some of those assets. So you have a 20-year marriage, but you didn't have common children together. Or even if you have a common children together and the decedent has a child or more or several children from another marriage or from another individual, then those children may have rights with no planning at all that usurp the spouse. So again, we would have to look at Washington law. But yet, after a 20-year, 25, 30-year marriage, well, that's probably a reasonably solid marriage. And most individuals, even in blended families, want to ensure that each of the spouses are well taken care of before the children are taken care of. And not 100% of the time.
What if you weren't married in Washington State, but you were together for 30 years? Like you were just cohabiting for people just lived together.
Yeah, boy, that's a whole nother pickle.
That's a whole nother thing.
And yes, it is possible that because we live in a community property state, that community property rights may have attached. And so it is a concern, and it's something that you need to look at. Again, is that your desire to take care of this individual that you're cohabitating with versus that you've been married to? Then you need to use your voice, because here's the deal. In these tricky situations, cohabitation, blended families, recently divorced situations and you haven't changed your beneficiary designations yet. All of these tricky scenarios end up being a potential landmine in closing the estate smoothly and quickly. So using your voice is always better, even if it is in a will document versus a trust. Now, you know that I am a proponent of trust instruments versus using a will. But I would rather have somebody do planning and use their voice than do no planning at all and end up in one of these scenarios that could kind of implode on the family and really not be what the individual wanted. So the bottom line, do good planning. It will resolve a majority of issues, if not all of them.
Need to plan for when you die. What happens when we die? This interesting discussion will continue in just a moment. You like the way Paul thinks about planning with purpose, and you want to find out more about his offerings. That's actually the name of his company, Planning with Purpose. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and so much more. It's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. And continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, looking at what happens when we die, how to plan for that as well as we can with our financial plan, trusts, wills, and how does probate work into all this? Have we gotten through all three of the evils of probate?
Oh, no, we've only gotten one. We've barely gotten through it.
Quite a subject.
Yeah. So,
how are probate laws in Washington compared to others? Other states.
Okay, so that's where a lot of the attorneys get the idea that we can have that probate is not that big of a deal. So let me address that for just a moment.
Okay.
Because the first thing we talked about was the courts being an open process. And so if you have to use the probate process because you have no plan, because you use a will, you die with an asset on your name on it. We have to transfer that. We have to get somebody legally empowered called a personal representative. Other people call that person an executor. So the thought process in a lot of the attorney world in Washington is, well, probate in Washington isn't that big of a deal. Here's a couple of the reasons why I think some of my colleagues would say this. Is the number one, we have what's called a non-intervention statute. So we have the ability to go before the court, open up a probate, and ask the court to kind of stay out of our business. Don't intervene, court. Don't set deadlines on us. We don't need to come here for a hearing unless somebody asks for your help. Okay? So that's called a non-intervention, which is don't intervene, court. And that works reasonably well. So we're entrusting the personal representative, again, that's also known as an executor, to manage the closing of the probate with their duties intact. So we anticipate that people are going to actually follow the duties that they are subscribed by law. In other words, that they're going to manage the estate with a duty of care, that they're going to manage it in a careful manner, considering everybody. They're going to do it with loyalty to the beneficiaries, but also loyalty, believe it or not, to creditors. Creditors have a legal standing in an estate, so you can't differentiate between beneficiaries. That's a duty of loyalty. And so, and there's a couple other duties, but those are the two primary ones. And so, therefore, we're going to anticipate that someone is going to do their job with integrity, but if they don't, the court is standing by. So how do we get into court? Well, a disgruntled beneficiary. That's a good way to get to court. Somebody doesn't get their money as fast as they think. Most probates take a minimum of 6 months and typically take a year or longer. So that is the, it takes too much time. That is also partially true. So it can take a longer time. There's a thing called notice to creditors. It takes 4 months to work through that. So even with my knowledge, I've done hundreds of probates. I cannot close a probate faster than 6 months. Mm. So therefore, that is the starting storyline. I've had other probates take more than 2 years. And there's family dynamics. There's issues going on. There's disgruntled beneficiaries in the background. Unfortunately, I've had clients die nefariously, and that takes longer. So we have to work out court issues. And there's multiple reasons why a probate can take a much longer time. Or there's businesses involved, business owners. I harp on you all the time. Do estate planning, please. I know you're earning money, and I know it's difficult to back out of your business, but you need to do good estate planning. Because if you were to pass away or become disabled, running a business, it's either going to falter or it's going to be very difficult for your family to close that probate. So there's reasons why a probate can take much longer, but minimum of 6 months. So is it a reality that a probate takes too long? That was one of the three evils. We got, right. got three of them down.
Right.
I got two of the three down. And yes, that is a reality. So even with non-intervention powers, please, court, don't intervene. We'll manage it and we'll only come to you if necessary. Well, there are certain things that must be done to close an estate properly. And it's in the personal representative's best interest. It protects them when they follow the law. So therefore, probates can take longer. Now, it also depends on whether you have a motivated personal representative or one who is emotionally checking out. Remember, this person typically knows the decedent and they are going through grief and they're going through difficulties. So sometimes you have someone who's very administrative. Let's just get this thing done. Okay, we can push it through as fast as possible. I have others that really just need some time because, well, they're going through the ringers just like the rest of the family is. And then time ends up being an enemy in a beneficiary's mind. So when time starts to play out longer and longer, most beneficiaries are looking for their money. Why haven't I gotten it? Because they've, in their brain, they've already started to use the money. They've right. already made financial choices. Right. And now they're behind the eight ball. Right. I bought this or I bought the new car when mom or dad died, knowing I was getting money, not understanding the process. So that's where we start getting into disgruntled beneficiaries, mm-hmm. is lack of communication and the ongoing march of time. But there's things that we just simply can't control that we need to be sensitive of. Now, the other reason that some attorneys would say that a probate is not that big of a deal in Washington is because we don't have a court fee attached to the asset value. Some places do. Mm. And so therefore, the cost is highly mitigated in Washington. That's one of the three concerns. Cost, time, and publicity. The cost, I would agree with my colleagues, cost is not going to run up in most probates, except for the longer it goes on, the more attorney fees there
sure,
are.
Sure.
If a decedent has a lot of debt or many, many assets they never consolidated, these are the things that take a lot more time to pull everything together, keep it organized, understand that we have to satisfy everything first before we can ever turn our attention to the beneficiaries. This is the probate process, and it can be avoided. We'll talk about that in upcoming shows, or we've talked about utilizing revocable living trusts or other mechanisms. We can avoid this process, but with good planning. So it, again, it all comes back. We got a plan. We can avoid the process. Why go through it if we don't have to is one of my sayings. Well, let's get some good planning, and Therefore, we can create a far more secure and faster timeline when good planning meets when someone passes away.
So important to have good planning for when we die. And how to have that plan, Planning with Purpose, is Paul's company. He would like to help you with your estate. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, more next time on the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.